everybody, and welcome to the second session of day two of the Love Panel, of the Love Summit. We had the Love Panel this morning, and it did go a little longer, but that's because we had six experts sharing wonderful messages for all of you. And you have up to 24 hours to listen to the replay of the Love Panel, to listen to the replays from yesterday, and your free pass gives you 24 hours for replays after the sessions are live. But if you want to get every word that was said or will be said this weekend, then please sign up for the Silver Pass so that you can get all the downloadable audios of all of the experts, and you'll also get the full transcripts of all of their wisdom, their inspiration, and their love. And I'm so amazed and truly inspired by all that our speakers are sharing. So I do hope you gift yourself with the Silver Pass or gift it to someone else this Valentine's weekend. I also wanted to suggest that you join us at the Love Summit Facebook group because we want to be able to connect with you now, and we can continue the connection even after this weekend. And Dr. Carey from this morning wanted me to remind us that sometimes on Valentine's Day, we contemplate and think about love a lot, but as we move on with our life, we tend to forget, and sometimes just having the recordings or the transcripts will remind us to remember that you can get back into alignment with the love that you are, especially on your hardest days. So thanks, Dr. Carey, for that reminder. And there's so much to share. There's so much that's been shared, and we've got a fabulous afternoon planned for you all. In just a few moments, Dr. Richard Schwartz will be joining us, and he's going to remind us that you are the one you've been waiting for, and you're going to learn how to love yourself and all of your parts and practice courageous love. And then at 2 o'clock Central Time, David G is coming back again. He was here yesterday. And he and I are going to talk about your compassionate communication and remind you that as you take care of your own inner child with love, you're going to be able to create loving, compassionate connections with others, no matter how challenging it seems at times. And then at 4 o'clock today, Mary Ellen Devine is actually going to do some EFT with us so we can unburden what we don't need and make room for more of what we do. So it's going to be another wonderful day, and I'm very, very happy that you're all here. I am so happy to introduce our next speaker this morning on Valentine's Day weekend. Dick Schwartz is a family therapist who has developed internal family systems, which is a method of doing therapy and also communicating that brings out the best, the highest self in each person in any relationship that you're in. He began his career as a systemic family therapist and an academic at the University of Illinois and at Northwestern University. He was grounded in a systems thinking, but then he developed IFS, which is internal family systems, in response to his clients' descriptions of various parts within themselves. And in 2000, he founded the Center for Self-Leadership, which offers three levels of training and workshops in IFS for professionals and also for the general public, both in this country and now all around the world. And he is a ceaseless traveler and speaker all over the world. He speaks with warmth, sensitivity, clarity, and humor. And when I first heard him speak over 20 years ago about self and parts, I felt that I understood myself for the first time. And for the last 20 years, he's been my teacher, my mentor, and I'm very happy to say my dear friend. And he shares himself and his theories with thousands of people with such humility and generosity that he allows the system and the practice to expand to cover all dimensions. Everything I do now, both in my practice and in my life, has been infused with the IFS principles, and I am so grateful for all that you have taught me, Dick, and I am so thrilled that you are here with us today. So welcome, Dr. Richard Schwartz.
Thank you, Linda. What a sweet introduction. And it's been a great experience to know you all these years.
Ah, thanks. And I know that the difficulty for me today, number one, will be to control my effusive parts, the ones that are so excited, both about the Love Summit, and also having so many of my personal teachers that are part of the speakers this whole weekend. But you are the one that started me first. You are the one that 20 years ago I first came to, and all that you've taught me and all that I bring both to individual counseling and couples counseling and divorce mediation and to my parenting and to the way I show up as a friend, all of that is infused with IFS and coming from my highest self. So can you give people a general overview of IFS, internal family systems, what it means?
I can try. We don't have the elevator speech down quite yet.
Okay.
I'll do my best. So,
all right.
As you said, I was a family therapist, and then I had clients who started talking about what they called these parts of them. I was working with bulimia at the time, and they would talk about this critical part who would attack them, and then that would bring up a very young, empty, lonely part. And that was just terribly distressing to feel, and so then the binge would come in to the rescue, take them out of the emptiness, but then the critic would come back to attack them, and then that would bring back that empty, raw, young part. And so I, as a family therapist, got interested in how all these parts related to each other inside, almost like an inner family. And as I learned from clients, and I, because I hadn't studied intrapsychic process, I didn't really know, I didn't come with a lot of assumptions. I had to really listen to what clients were saying about them. And so what they ultimately had to say was that we all have them, it's my belief, we're all multiple personalities in a sense, that we all have these different parts, and they, what we call thinking is often just they're interacting with each other in different ways, and that they're all good, which is hard to believe because some of them seem so destructive, and particularly in intimate relationships, they can get in our way in a big way, but it turns out that they all have good intentions and they actually have a lot of talents and resources to give to us, that it's the nature of the mind to have them, but that because of what happens in our lives, especially the hurts and injuries and humiliations, so on, they become quite extreme. They leave their naturally valuable states and take on roles inside of us that are anachronistic in a way because they're kind of frozen in the past and they don't realize, they're not updated about how life isn't quite as scary as it once was. And so they can play out in our relationships in a number of different ways. So, you know, one basic assumption is that we all have these parts, they're valuable, they are forced out of their naturally valuable states by traumas and hurts, and they play a big role in our relationships. And then the second big assumption is that sort of behind all of them or beneath all of that is what I call the self, with a capital S.
And what's the self? So when people are listening, and they're listening from the perspective of how does this relate to me, how does this relate to my partner, how does this relate to my being in the world, what is the concept of self for them to hear?
Yeah, well, it's a tough one for a lot of people because if I were to describe it, many people would say, well, there's nobody like that inside of me. But it is what people meditate to get to often. It's this sort of essence in us that is a core of valuable qualities. Oddly enough, all of them begin with the letter C, I discovered. Things like calm and compassion and courage, clarity, connectedness, confidence, and so on, because I can't think of the rest right now.
Courage.
Yeah,
clarity.
I think courage, creativity, did I say confidence, I think?
It's calmness, curiosity, clarity, compassion, confidence, creativity, courage, and connectedness.
Right. Thank you, Linda.
I was reading
off
your website.
And what I found was just in helping clients with these parts, if I could get them to relax a little bit, which I could early on, this state would kind of pop up in them, and they would suddenly seem like a different person who now seemed very centered. And whereas, because I was a family therapist, I was trying to help them interact with these parts inside. Earlier, they might have been afraid of the part or angry at it. And suddenly they would say, I just feel kind of curious about why it's doing what it's doing. And they were calm and confident. And when I asked what part that was, they'd say, well, that's not really a part like these others. That's more who I am, myself. And so that's why we call it the self. And it turns out now, having done this 30 years, thousands of people, as you said, all over the world are doing this, that state is just beneath the surface of these parts. And when they agree to relax inside and separate a little bit, that comes out naturally and kind of spontaneously in everybody. And so the big discovery in IFS is that you don't really have to meditate 20 years to get to it, and that it's universal, and that so everybody has it in them, sort of our birthright, and that it can't be damaged by trauma. So if you apply all this to relationships, then ideally we're going to relate to our partner from that place that I just described, the self. And what we try to do when we work with couples is to foster self-to-self communication. But most of the time we don't, because our intimate partner, like no one else, has a way to trigger these very vulnerable parts in us that are stuck in hurt times in the past. And then that will trigger the parts of us that want to protect us. And those parts are the ones, when we get into conflict, that usually are doing the talking with our partner.
So just to paraphrase what you were saying, because I know on the website where I was finding all the list of C's that I have on my board in my office, it's kind of like we are this oceanic self, capital S self, when we're connected to that divine space of who we are. And we're also the wave when our egos come into play and our traumas from the past that we've pushed aside or the managers or protectors that we seek to defend ourselves with are often what the couple is really engaged in. But when you get to the place of self, you're coming from a oneness which is bigger than and more inclusive of all your parts, but with a lot of love and compassion, right?
Something like that, right. And curiosity. So when you're in that state, you're not defensive. You're just open. You want to know what's going on with your partner. You're not trying to change or control them. And then you're wanting to know so that you can show your love to that person, because that's kind of a part of the inborn desire of this place itself, is to connect in a loving way to self in another person or self actually in your own parts. So there's almost like my take on it is that what we might call God subdivided, and there's that drop in each of us, and it wants to connect the dots, so wants to come back into unity. And one way to do that is for us to relate to somebody else, self to self, and that's what we're here to do. That's what we're here to learn how to do.
And our partners, past and present, help us do that, right? Because you talk about our mentors sometimes being our tormentors, and even when there's conflict, there's something to learn if we're curious rather than judging.
Right? Yeah, so most of us have been taught and actually want our partners to be our soulmates who never upset us and only make us feel good about ourselves. And in fact, we're kind of socialized to believe that that person is out there. And if we just look hard enough, we're going to find that person. And my take is we're here to heal all this stuff in ourselves that I've been talking about. And your soulmate doesn't really exist. And if you did, it wouldn't really be helpful because you wouldn't know about the stuff you need to heal. And so our partner should trigger us and be our, like you said, tormentor with a hyphen between the tor and the mentor. And in doing that, gives us access to these parts of us that are hurting and are stuck in scenes in our childhood often that actually need our attention and need us to heal. And as we can do that, then our relationships get better and better because we're no longer, we're not such a minefield where, you know, I like this metaphor of most of us come out of our families with what we'll think of as invisible bone bruises where we don't even see them, but there's this deep bruise inside so that when our partner, even inadvertently in communicating with us, touches one of those, it is like a big explosion of emotion inside, and we don't realize, we don't understand why we react so hard because it's invisible and our partner is blown away by our reaction. But if you stayed with that and followed it back past the part where it's stuck in the past, you'll often see a scene where you were hurt in some way in your family or with peers or in school or something. And there's a process to actually retrieve that part out of where it's stuck in the past and help it feel much better and unload the pain or fear or shame that it still carries. So our tormentors are in our life to try and help us realize this is what we have to work on. And as we do heal that, then the minefield isn't so, there aren't so many minds in the minefield, and our self is much better able to stay connected to our partners.
Fabulous. So, for instance, if we have a experience in our childhood where one or more parents or caretakers was not giving us what we needed and we felt unloved or abandoned or neglected, and we just kind of exile those feelings and don't deal with them and decide we're going to manage and find somebody to connect with, and the minute they don't call us when they say they will or they're not giving us the attention that we need, we're not just dealing in the present with what's happening, we're going back to the minefield of the pain in the past and needing to take care of that inner child and reclaim him or her in a way that allows us to stay present with our partner.
Yeah, that's a nice summary. And so when our partner doesn't call, like you said, and it takes us back into that time when we were so hurt by the neglect of a parent, then another part of us says, well, okay, that's not the right partner anymore, and so we've got to go find somebody else. Or we'll decide, well, we've got to change this person, make them aware of how hurtful they are and how they have to call us a lot more than they are. And so we'll come with that kind of energy to our partner to make them change. Or another protector might say, well, it's really because you're so needy, so we have to lock up that exile even more so that you don't feel bothered by things like this, which never really works. So when our partner doesn't act the way they're supposed to in terms of being our redeemer, because those what we call exile parts you just mentioned that are stuck back when we were neglected or hurt somehow are looking for someone who resembles the person who hurt us in the first place, because when we were young, we thought we were going to die if we were neglected. It was so scary to have somebody act as if we're not valued, that with that sense of not being valuable or being worthless comes the survival terror, like I'm not going to make it. And with that comes a drive for a redeemer. And often the focus is on getting the person who said you weren't initially when you were young, that you weren't valuable, to change their mind, or someone who resembles that person. So a lot of the time we'll go looking for someone who actually resembles one of our caretakers, expecting that they're going to change and actually finally let us know we are valuable. But we wind up picking somebody who does resemble our caretaker, who does the same thing, basically. And so... So that's part of the dilemma in relationships, that we're looking for somebody to to take care of these hurt, exiled parts of us and make us feel valuable, but that person can't do it, for one. And second, often has qualities that will hurt us again. So
you're saying the three things that we do are either to work really hard to try to change the other person, which can come off as judging or blaming or judgmental or critical, or we decide we want to leave and physically do, or the third way you said is to protect ourselves. And often as we're protecting ourselves, what we do is either put a wall up to keep ourselves from being hurt, but it also keeps us from the intimacy and connection that we're feeling. And then when we're looking at our partners from that side of the wall, we're looking at them through a filter that says you're always or you're never, and so you're no longer connected or present, and the relationship is in conflict, right?
Yeah, and then that'll trigger your partner's parts,
right?
Protective parts. And so, you know, when I work with couples, it's often parts wars. There's none of this nice self energy we're talking about in the office at all. And a lot of the beginning of the work is simply getting everybody to drop their weapons and then to do what I call a U-turn in their focus, so that they, instead of being focused on changing the other person, they begin to look at the stuff that's coming up in their relationship inside of themselves and start to commit to trying to heal that. So they are then using their partner as their tormentor, in the way I've been talking about. And in the process of doing that, the goal becomes to help each partner become what I'll call the primary caretaker of their own exiled parts, which then frees the other to become the secondary caretaker of those parts. Because most of us have it reversed. We want our partner to be the primary caretaker of our parts that feel so worthless or empty or lonely, and that's a setup. That's kind of the cruel joke of relationships, but that we all expect that, but then we can never get it that way. We have to have a loving relationship with those parts of us first. And as you said, if we have our partner in that role, then we're having to control that person all the time because it's delicate. They have to either not do certain things that will trigger or do certain things that are going to reassure, and our partner feels very bombarded by all these control messages. So my goal is to free each partner up to have what I call courageous love, where their love isn't so conditional. It's just the self-led love of this other person. And even if the person gets distant or even decides that the relationship isn't the best, that you can still stay connected and stay in this open, loving way. And in relationships where that's achieved, partners talk about the relief of not having to take care of these little kids and the other person.
Exactly. And when I do a lot of divorce mediation, people come in with parts flailing all over the place, and I see them angry and judgmental. And when we talk a little bit about their family of origin and we find out how they dealt with their pain and sadness and how they reacted, and they can often point out their partner's parts much more easily that they can part out their own. But when they allow themselves to connect to their heart and connect to the self inside of them, they then can have more compassion for those exiled, hurt, and sad feelings in their partner. And even going through a divorce, they can come from a much more self-led perspective because they have empathy first for themselves and then for each other. It's a beautiful dynamic to teach.
Yeah, that's really true. The way you feel toward parts of you will play out in how you relate to your partner when your partner acts like those parts of you. So
in terms of talking about your book, which I'd like you to do, but I'd also like you to see, is there some way you can talk directly into the phone? Just to say
not?
A little louder. Yep.
Is that better?
It's better. Are you on a headset?
Yeah.
Okay. If you would just come off the headset and come on, because we can hear you, but I'd love them to hear you even more clearly.
Well, is this more clear?
That's better. Thanks.
Okay.
Okay, so You're the one you've been waiting for. That's the book that you wrote. It's a beautiful, I reread it. I read it several years ago. Could you tell us more about You're the One You've Been Looking For?
You're the One You've Been Waiting For is...
You're the One You've Been Waiting For. Yes, I'm sorry. You're the One You've Been
really,
Waiting For.
It's okay. It's the theme I've been trying to develop. That,
yes.
That we're all waiting for this external person to take care of these parts of us, but that, in fact, they can't, and, in fact, you can, even though most of us don't realize that. And this process I've developed called IFS is designed to help people focus inside and notice the pain or the fear or the shame or the anger, whatever the emotion is, and actually get into what now is being called mindful, a mindful place relative to that. So like most people often, if they're fighting with their partner and they start with their anger, I have them focus on it, and I'll say, how do you feel toward that anger? And they'll say, well...
So can we take a minute and have people actually do this with you? Because I'm sure as our listeners are listening in, they can identify that there's somebody that they're angry at. And just tell them what
okay.
you would tell them if you're in their office. So talk to them directly, and they're going to see what it's like to feel IFS in action. And I'm going to do it
all
too.
Right.
Okay?
All right. Well, I'll do it with you, and then they can play along. How about that?
Okay. Do I have to tell who I'm dealing with, or I can keep that private?
No. yeah, but we can do this. So,
okay.
Linda, think of a person.
And everybody else with Linda. So you're all doing your own work while I'm doing it with you online. Okay, everybody? Go ahead, Dick.
All right.
We're ready.
So think of a person in your current life or past life who seem to really trigger you. Maybe you've closed your heart to, or maybe you're trying to connect with, but you have trouble. So somebody who triggers these protective parts of you.
Okay.
And Linda, just tell me when you got somebody in mind.
I've got somebody, and I'm going to offer people that if they don't have anybody currently, they probably have somebody in their past. So you can
yeah.
even do some healing with somebody that you're not even in contact with anymore, but is kind of just out there. So, yes, I have somebody. Thank you.
Okay. And so put that person in a room by him or herself, a contained
okay.
room, and you're outside the room looking at, is it a him?
Yes.
You're looking at him through a window.
Okay.
And now, from outside the room, have the person do the thing that triggers you and just see what happens as you watch that, what happens in your body.
My heart constricts. My breathing intensifies. I get all the symptoms of stress. I get shallow
uh-huh.
breathing.
Okay.
I get constricted. My jaw tightens.
So that's happening right now?
Yes.
Okay. And then... as you notice your jaw and your breathing, and do you have a sense of what part of you that is? Is that anger, or what's the feeling that's coming?
There might be some anger. There might be some resentment. There might be some fear. There
okay.
might be the wall that I've learned to put up, or the filter
okay.
that I keep seeing him from.
All right, so those would be different parts.
Okay.
And they're one of those that you want to work with this exercise.
Maybe the wall.
All right. So as you notice your physical experience of the wall, what's that like?
It's like a shutdown, like a numbing.
All right. So you feel numbing in your body.
Mm-hmm.
And is that centered anywhere in particular?
Probably around my heart and stomach.
Yeah.
My core.
So as you notice it there, just get a real sense of the impact it has on your body for a second.
Okay.
And then tell this wall internally that you're not going to go into the room right now with this guy.
Okay.
So it's safe for it to relax a little bit. And just
okay.
see if you can notice it beginning to separate from you.
Yes.
See if it's willing.
It's willing.
Okay.
But fortunately, I've done a lot of work with you with this. So for people who are listening, if your wall isn't willing to separate, we're just going to love it. And Dick's going to show you how to be with that too, because a lot of people who are listening don't want to give up their walls because they're afraid that if they do, they're going to be vulnerable and hurt. but in this exercise,
we're not going into the room, so the walls can relax a little bit.
Right.
And okay, it's willing. Okay. And now, how do you feel toward this wall as you notice it?
I like it because it's been keeping me safe.
Okay. All right, so let it know that. Let it know you value how it's protected you, and just see how it reacts to your appreciation.
It likes being acknowledged.
Okay.
And appreciated and seen.
Yeah, and how do you notice that? It said that, or you just notice a shift of some kind?
It just relaxes.
Relaxes more?
Yes.
Okay.
It's like, ah, finally, somebody's here. I don't have to be the dam anymore.
Right. All right. And just ask it what it's afraid would happen if it didn't come up so big with this person.
That I would be hurt or I would be taken advantage of or something would be said that would make me feel vulnerable. Or even more so, something would be triggered that would make me go back into old codependent behavior and I'd be working overtime, please.
Okay, so it could be a whole variety of things. Either
right.
It's protecting, it's standing in front of parts that could
right.
be hurt by this person, by something
yes.
you might say.
Or have been hurt
or,
by this person.
And have in the past.
Right.
Or it's kind of holding back parts that could be sucked back in.
Yes, and that's probably the bigger one for me.
Take care of him, yeah.
Right.
Okay. All right. So does that make sense to you, Linda?
Mm-hmm.
Would you be doing that?
Yes.
Okay, so again, thank it for its service.
Thank you for your service.
And now the next steps of this, I don't know if you want to do it, would be, because you thought the codependent part was the bigger one, would be to actually see if this wall would let us try to help that part, not be so vulnerable to that.
Sure. Everybody with
okay.
me? So what we're doing is, just for those listeners, what you're doing is you're just working with a part of you that's been protecting you from your partner, whether it's your wall or your anger or your resentment or your detachment or your withdrawal or your sarcasm. You're willing to say, okay, I know I'm using this wall to protect me and keep me distant. And for this exercise, for now, I'm willing to put down my wall and see what's underneath and who's behind it that the wall is protecting. And for me, it might be some anger, it might be some resentment, it might be some hurt, it might be some pain, but it's also some fear that if I don't keep my wall up, I might go back into the old dynamic of just codependently trying to be nice and pleasing and caretaking and lose myself again. So that's my update, and I would like everybody to just take a moment and just go inside and breathe. Everybody just take a deep breath. And every time you breathe, you kind of reboot into your heart, into your higher self, into self. And then we're going to let Dick continue as we go even deeper to see who and what is behind the walls that we have built with our partners, past or present. Okay, Dick, I'm ready.
All right.
Okay.
All right, so then ask the wall if we have permission to go to the part that does want to please this person, this guy?
Well, there's some, the wall is also aware that we're talking to thousands of people and I'm about to go deeper into some vulnerability here, so I just need to name what the wall's afraid will happen, but I trust you and all the people that are listening.
And we can honor that fear and not do it.
No, I'm going with you. I want to model this because we're all afraid to do this. We're all afraid that if we go to the soft exiles, those inner children, we're just going to be flooded or we're going to be shamed or we're going to be embarrassed or we're never going to come out. And fortunately, I've had 20 years of this, so I know that on the other side, there is freedom and liberation and compassion and more connection and more passion and more joy. So I'm ready. Okay, here we go.
Okay, but I think I want to say to the listeners that, like you said, you do have experience with this. And
exactly.
If they doubt, it's probably better to not do this until they have somebody who can guide them more.
Okay, and I'll tell them that in the guiding of that, just because it's coming up, the 7-week program that I'm doing after this session is over, that's part of the Gold Pass, will be actually practicing what we're doing here so that they can learn to do it with themselves. So
okay.
They can listen now and practice later. But okay, or they can find an IFS therapist in their community at selfleadership.org, and we'll tell you more about that later. Okay, here we go.
Great.
Okay.
All right, Linda. So then focus on the part that might want to take care of him again or please him
okay.
now and see where you find that one in your body.
Kind of all over.
Okay. And how do you feel toward this one?
I like her. She's a pretty nice woman, pretty codependent, but nice.
All right. The parts of you that judge her as codependent, let's get them to step back in there.
Oh, those. Okay. So I wasn't coming from myself.
Right.
Got it. Those self-critics show up. Okay. Ready. Okay, I like the part of me that's the codependent part because she's done a really good job of many things in my life. She's managed my life very well.
So let her know that.
Okay.
See how she reacts to your appreciation.
She's a little skeptical, but she's okay.
Okay. Now, do you see her or you just sense her in there?
I see her. I have a picture of myself from 20 years ago. I see her well.
Okay. All right. All right. And let's just see what she wants you to know about why she might want to take care of this guy again.
Because she wants to be loved. She wants to be connected. She wants to feel safe. She wants to be happy. She wants the world to be happy.
All right. So she just wants to take care of everybody so everybody's
yes.
happy with her?
Yes.
Or is there something still... Is there something still with this guy in particular? Ask her that.
Probably, yes.
Okay. All right. And what's she afraid would happen if she didn't, just ask her what she's afraid would happen if she didn't get him to like her again or take care of him?
That she'd be abandoned and her dreams would be quashed and the happily ever after wouldn't happen.
Okay, and that's sort of happened with this guy, I get the impression, already.
We're not naming
right?
names. We're not naming names.
I'm sorry. All right, so... all right, so how do you feel
Thousand
for
of
now?
My closest friends are listening in.
Right.
But I hope I'm
now.
Speaking for everybody. We all have people that we love, that we have conflicts with, that we wish had different relationships currently. And like Dick says, it's a matter of going inside and doing our own work and releasing ourselves from our exiled feelings or the way we've managed and just to find ways to be more loving. So that's what we're doing. But I'm doing the U-turn, and the way Dick spells it is, the U-turn is Y-O-U-turn, so I'm turning inward and just loving my part through this. And
yeah.
Here we go. Okay.
Do you want to keep going?
Sure.
All right. So let her know you get that she's got this ideal of getting everybody to love each other and her, and that she's afraid that this guy won't, that she'd have to give up the dream with this guy.
Okay. She heard you.
Ask. She did?
Yeah.
Just ask if there's anything she wants you to know about the past, where she might be stuck.
Well, maybe because I've done enough of this work, or maybe because next to my 44-year-old, I have a picture of my 4-year-old, and I know that there's an inner child who, at the age of 2.5, even when I had this wonderful family. I have this wonderful family, loving mother, father, brother. But when my mother went to the hospital to have my brother, it was many years ago, and she was gone for 2 weeks. And my father worked for 2 weeks, and they put me with an aunt and uncle who didn't really want to take care of me. So many days I was left outside to play on my own at the age of 2 and a half and felt very abandoned and alone. And remember myself being in that crib at 2 years old thinking, I'm always going to be nice so everybody will love me and nobody will ever leave me again. So
okay,
we jumped right into that exile.
So did that come up, Linda, or is that what you think it might be?
That's what I think it might be.
But so go back.
Okay.
It may well be that, but go back to this pleasing part.
Okay.
And ask it if that's right or if there's some other place.
There may be some other place.
Okay.
And only for the sake of people listening in who don't want to get too far into my story but are into theirs, why don't we generically take this so that they can see where we're headed and we can have more. So talk us through where you would take me, and only because I feel so gifted to have the time, but I don't want to make this all about me, even though I hope people are learning from me, that you would have me do what? Have me talk to my...
Let's see, if it were that two-year-old that you mentioned,
uh-huh,
then I would have you focus on it and let it know, you know, get you to a point where you were caring of it, let it know that. And then at some point, I would ask you to go into the scene and be there with that child in the way she needed somebody during those 2 weeks. And
what I have done, because I have been gifted not only to study with you, but Susan McConnell, Tony Blank, or Herbine Blank, and so many of the other gifted IFS therapists, I have had the opportunity, and I'm going to invite everybody listening to take this opportunity, that wherever your exile pain started, and again, we don't have to go too far into it, but what you can do is take a deep breath, and connect to that self, that higher self, capital S self, oceanic self that you are, that's related to your essence and your divine being and your deepest knowing, and your current present moment awareness. And just go back and I'm going to take that little girl out of the crib. I'm going to hold her in my arms. I'm going to take her back with me to keep her safe. And I'm going to remind her that I'm here now, that I don't need to be codependent. I don't need my wall to protect me, that I can stay loving to her and keep her safe. I can stay loving to him and wish him well. And at the same time, spread more compassion all around because I'm coming from self, because you taught me well.
And you can only do that if you do become the primary caretaker of that little two-year-old.
Right.
Take her out of the dreadful place of that scene in the past to a safe place.
And once we do that, what I've also learned to do, because I have done this work so long, both on both sides, someone who's having the therapy and also offering this therapy, is I also have a great deal of compassion for his inner child. I have a great deal of respect for anything that happened to his past, anything that happened to him, anything that happened in our relationship, anything that I knowingly or unknowingly did to hurt him, and in my heart and in many ways have asked for forgiveness and forgiven him. And even though forgiveness is a daily practice sometimes, and gratitude as well, IFS has really helped not only shift my perspective of how people can relate after relationships end, but also infuse it into my work of helping people either mediate or get divorced from a place where they can be grateful for what each of them brought to the relationship and be grateful for what they've learned from the tour-mentoring that the partners have brought, and also show up to be more loving and open and spacious and connected, even with appropriate boundaries. So
Yeah, that's nice summary of some of the goals. And what you find is that in addition to those C words we talked about, this place of self has a kind of natural forgiveness, because when you're in that place, you see, it's like you have x-ray vision, you see past the protectors of your partner to their exiles, to their hurt parts, and you can have compassion even in the face of their protectors. So, and too often, too many systems try to force for premature forgiveness, so they try to say, if you're a good person, you'll forgive this person, but the act of doing that then means you have to push more and more of the parts of you that are hurt out of your consciousness, which only makes them more feel abandoned more.
And all that you've taught about self, and the first time I saw you, you did a self up the mountain where we can separate from the parts of us that are judgmental and hurt and angry and reactive and sad and scared and anxious, and just come from that place of peace and calm and compassion. And after studying with you, I was studying at the Chopra Center and saw how much they connected in terms of that oceanic self, that oneness. You know, you talked on the website about being a wave and an ocean, and our egos, the way we manage our feelings, create the ego or the persona or the mask or the managers, the protectors that we put on in the world. But when we quiet our minds, and you mentioned meditating, you can get to the stillness inside, which is that soul or that essence or that capital S self. And then when you relate to the other person from self, you're no longer in that fight flight response that causes you to be sarcastic or withholding, but allows you to really create a solution to any problem that you have from a higher perspective than the level of the problem. And you're really doing it from a self-to-self perspective. So
yes,
it's a great, it's a great way to connect, and it's also a great way to learn to love yourself, because, you know, I said in the video that love is the answer, and it starts with loving yourself, and most people don't enough. So can you talk a little bit more about self-love and how that adds more passion, connection, and fun to your life?
Well, most people don't, because we're not taught how to. We're given the message that we should love ourselves, but to do that, you have to help all the parts that don't love each other and don't love you to feel connected and appreciated by you, and that takes some skill. It's not something you can just will. And so a lot of the IFS process is about very concretely doing that and learning how to do it on your own as a bit of a skill. And as we're speaking, as you do that, not only can you lead your life more often from these qualities, these C-word qualities, but also as you can heal the parts of you that were hurt in relationships, they have more access to you, and they transform from being bundles of pain or shame or rage or hurt to being, like you said, sort of playful, happy, loving, creative, spontaneous, trusting, innocent, childlike parts of you that they were originally. And now you have access to them because you haven't locked them away. Before, you did lock them away because you didn't want to be around them because they could pull you into all of their pain. Now you love having them around because they spice up your life so much. So, unfortunately, the process in our society of going through life involves locking away more and more of our juice because it got hurt. And this is a way to bring it back and heal it, so we can bring all those joyful qualities into our life and have more fun.
That's terrific. And when I talk to people about, you know, getting to their feelings, and I know Susan McConnell does a lot of work with, and a lot of therapists do with somatic IFS, how we embody the pain, how we get hurt as children and keep that pain in our body and then go into our heads and figure out how to manage. And when we can't manage, we do extreme things to kind of numb us. But when I go to that place where I can find that inner child, and even taking that two-year-old out of the crib at my aunt and uncle's house and taking her to a safe place and holding her in my arms and having her feel my presence and my unconditional love, that if she wants to be sad and if she wants to be angry and if she wants to be scared, I'm going to be here for her. And as she learns to trust me, then I'm who shows up in this or future relationships. And the other piece that I often do is when I'm holding my inner child in my arms, I allow myself to kind of fall back for me in the hands of God. So whether it's God or oneness or higher power or spirit or universal self, I actually feel, I allow myself to open to receive unconditional love from God and the universe that I then open my heart to and channel that love and unconditional support to that younger part of myself that needs it. And it's not an obligation. It's not one more thing for my codependent part to take care of, but it allows me to channel in that infinite love that's there and just be a vessel to receive, which a lot of people can't do, but to receive and just allow it to flow through me to those parts of me that need it. And then as I fill up with that love and compassion, just envision it going out from my body into the world, into all the relationships that I have with my children and my family and hopefully the world. And the IFS process teaches people how to do that. And it's a beautiful, beautiful system, Dick. You've spent 30 years creating it. And the way that you have put it out there, and I know you did it in a way that took great courage because it wasn't mainstream 30 years ago. And I remember you speaking in a, you know, in a room to very interested people, but now you speak before hundreds all over the world, thousands all over the world at Esalen and Kripalu, and you know, they can go to your website, selfleadership.org, and see all the different places that you're going to be. I think there's one you're going to, was the Buddha and IFS therapist. And great title, because I really think that's true. I think when we're talking self, we're talking that Buddha nature, that compassionate heart that's in all of us. And it's just your vernacular for helping us get there. Don't you think?
I do, yeah. I think I've kind of repackaged some perennial wisdom, and Emerson had a line that was something like he was frustrated because he found that I've lost the line. Oh, but I totally lost the line. I can't believe it. But anyway, he was frustrated because all of his wisdom had been found before by the ancients, and that's what I mean.
Exactly. Exactly. But we're all, you know, I think we're all teaching the same thing, which is love. You know, how do you become more loving? How do you,
exactly.
Which is the whole reason for the summit and the whole reason that, you know, I'm so thrilled because I've said before that I sit in the classes and the workshops that I've been so gifted to be able to take and listen to you and David G and Sark and so many others and then feel like we're all channels. We're all these funnels taking in the sum of our experience and our wisdom and our knowledge and our dharma and our purpose. And if we can get our egos out of the way to quit worrying about what people think of us or if we can do it or how to do it or whatever and just allow ourselves to embody that self leadership, that capital S self, soul, spirit, essence, and just live from that, it changes everything, doesn't it?
Yeah, it was his best ideas had been stolen by the ancients. That was the one.
There you go. Exactly. This is Vedic wisdom from 5,000 years ago. That's why when I heard Deepak Chopra's talk and I thought, well, he and Dick should get together. They're talking the same thing in different
right.
vernacular. And the other thing I realized when I was learning meditation is the reason a lot of people can't meditate is because they haven't done the IFS work. In other words,
yeah, well,
when they...
A lot of meditation teachers are combining it with IFS.
Right, because if you don't heal your parts burdens and nobody's damaged out here. I mean, a lot of people talk about baggage or broken or, you know, any pejorative that they use for themselves. Nobody's broken. You're all divine beings of light and love. And things happened in your past that covered your light. And what IFS does is just help you with a great deal of love and compassion go back and unburden those burdens. So you're already in touch with the divine light that's already inside of you. And it does it in such a way that as you unburden, you're left with the joy that's your natural birthright. So you're automatically more loving and compassionate and present. And, of course, as far as passion goes, when you learn to put your walls down with your partner, guess what happens? Passion comes back.
That's right.
It's just all constricted. I mean, I think IFS should be taught in schools because I've actually had children of families come in, even when they're 8 years old, and I have this board that I have with self listed with its eight qualities and a list of exiles and managers and extreme parts. And 8-year-old children can learn that when they see their parent angry, they're really feeling hurt. Or the child can learn not to act out, but to talk for their sadness or their fear. So you learn how to be a better parent. You learn how to be a better child to your parents because you can, again, see the inner child that they were and how they were parented and have compassion that they really did the best they knew how to do with you, even if it wasn't everything you needed. And it leads to more forgiveness of your parents. Even if they're not still here, you forgive them. I think IFS should be taught in every workplace so that people could relate self to self with everyone that they work with their friends and their families. And I know that there's a new foundation. Tell us about the foundation that has been started with IFS to kind of spread the word and get it out there.
Yeah, it's called the Foundation for Self-Leadership. And the goal is to raise money for research so that we can do some of the things you've been talking about. Well, there is interest in bringing it into education and also into corporations, and so all of that is in the works, but it takes being able to document its effectiveness. So that's what we're trying to raise money for.
And I see something on the website that IFS is shown to reduce pain and depression and improve physical function for rheumatoid arthritis patients.
Yeah, that's the one outcome study we've done so far, and it was done at the Harvard Hospital out here in Boston, and we had really, really valuable positive results, published in the Journal of Rheumatology. So it was a really well-done study, and I'm very proud of it, with not just psychological variables, but also the pain process, the disease process itself, as measured by a blinded physician. So,
fabulous.
We want to do more of that kind of stuff through the foundation.
And with meditation, like you said, you didn't have to meditate for 20 years, but when you start to meditate, if you haven't healed the burdens from your past and the energy of them is still locked in your body, when you sit down to meditate and you're not busy anymore, you're not doing anything addictive or extreme to kind of numb you, and you're sitting with the feelings that you haven't processed, it makes it difficult to meditate. So if you take the time to learn about self-leadership and what it means to speak for your parts instead of from your parts, and what it means to go inside and love yourself unconditionally as you stay curious as to what role your parts have, how you've exiled them, how you've managed, how you get extreme, and also because you're looking from a higher self perspective to learn to be empathetic even when your partner is acting out in a way that you think is extreme. You can know that underneath their behavior that they're showing you is a protective mechanism that's really protecting a wonderful little child inside. And if you see it from that perspective, you're going to shift into self-leadership even when there's a part of you that's really angry or really reactive. Right, Dick?
Right. Well said.
And it helps to be courageous because when you're courageous, you show up willing to be vulnerable, willing to talk about the parts that you've exiled. So you talk about your fear and you talk about your sadness and you talk about your hurt. For some people who have exiled it, they need to talk about their anger too. But a lot of times people go around angry because they're not willing to talk about their sadness. Excuse me. But as you learn how to speak for those exiles, you don't need the walls. You don't need the anger or resentment. And you really come from love, even if the boundaries that you need to set with somebody means that you can no longer be with them. And you have to end the relationship. But you can even end a relationship from self and have a self-led divorce if you need to and compassionately mediate and create a new dynamic with your restructured family that's really self-led. So it covers past relationships, relationships with people who are no longer here. It covers the relationships with yourself, and it does so in a way that really infuses a holistic perspective where you tune into your body, you let go of the limiting beliefs that you've taken on from your caretakers or your past or the ways you've managed. You really connect to that spiritual essence of who you are, and you relate to each other from your highest and best self. And it's a beautiful process of compassionate communication. It's one that I have studied for 20 years and actually will be speaking next about compassionate communication and how it leads to more peace and love and joy. But first, tell us a little bit more before we have to go about what you're excited about, Dick, and how people can reach you.
Well, as you said, the website is selfleadership.org, and I can be reached that way. And mainly we train therapists, but we do retreats for the public, and I do it in very nice settings three times a year, which people can follow off the website. And we have an annual conference that the public is welcome to come to, and this year it's in Providence, Rhode Island in November. And otherwise, we are trying to design a program for the public, which we call self-leadership training, I think, which is, I'm currently working on the curriculum for that, but that's a very exciting prospect for me to make this more widespread and maybe influence the culture a little bit with it.
That's fabulous. And while that's being created, they can get the gold pass for the 7 weeks, which will incorporate a great deal of IFS. We start with IFS and how you bring self-leadership into your own self-love and your love of the people in your life, and you let go of limiting beliefs and feel more forgiving and expansive and speak your truth and connect to your intuition and relate from your highest self. So the other piece is, in terms of going to the site, selfleadership.org, they have a blog there, and they also have a way to find a therapist. There are hundreds of therapists all over the world, and each and every one is self-led and loving, compassionate, and very skilled in these techniques. So if anything has been triggered in this call or this weekend that you want to go deeper, then go to selfleadership.org where you can find a therapist. And if you sign up to create a page for yourself or to create a connection with them, then I think Dick is offering a free gift of your first chapter of the book, right, Dick? That
they'll ideally, if we can work it out in a week to get it set up. None of us are that technically inclined, but I would like to.
Okay, well, we'll figure out how to get them the first chapter in a PDF format, because you're the one that you've been waiting for is a wonderful book that you can order online. But even in the first chapter, it outlines all the things that Dick has talked about, the U-turn, the courageous love, what it means to be in self and speak for your parts, to come from your heart, to come with compassion, and to also have faith that your partner was put into your life to kind of teach you a lot of the things that you were meant to learn, and that in learning it, you can go deeper into more intimacy, and you can go deeper into more compassion, which leads to more passion, which leads to more connection, which leads to more fun, and that can start just by knowing that you know how to do it, and you can learn how to do it. You've learned a great deal from listening. You quoted Pema Chodron in your book, Dick, that other people trigger us to trigger the karma that we haven't worked out. And they mirror us and give us the chance to befriend all that ancient stuff that we carry around like a backpack full of boulders, and that the idea of karma is that you continually get the teachings you need to have in order to open your heart. And what we're doing this weekend and all the time is opening our hearts to all parts of ourselves, opening our hearts to all parts of our partners, past and future, and to be a channel of love to ourselves, to our families, to our communities, and ultimately to the world. So all of this can be found. There's so much information on selfleadership.org. Dick, I thank you so much for being here. I thank you so much for the 20 years plus, the 30 years total. I've only been part for 20 years. But you are a gift to this world and have been a true personal gift to me. So thank you.
Well, thank you, Linda. It's been great to have you in our community and to have you supporting IFS this way. And this project, I think, is an exciting one. I'm really happy to you invited me to be part of that.
Couldn't have done it without you. So thank you. And thank you all for listening, and come back soon, because I'm going to continue this conversation on what we started and talk about compassionate communication, bringing more peace, love, and joy. So thank you so much, Dick. Sending a lot of love to you and a lot of love to everybody. And I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye. But before you go, there's just a couple more things I want to add. First of all, I want to thank all my old friends and my new friends for being there for my therapy session. Such a gift it was for me to actually have that time with Dick. And model, I hope, what it's like to work with our walls and retrieve our inner child. But I also, on this Valentine's weekend, wanted to give a shout-out to the other IFS practitioners out there. So many I've learned from personally, like Beth O'Neill, Susan McConnell, Cindy Libman, Mitchie Rose, Stephanie Meese, C. Sykes, Kay Gardner, Tony Irvine Blank, and so many more of you. If I forgot to mention your name, I'm sorry. But go to selfleadership.org. And a special shout out to my sister Einat in Israel, who with her friend Anat Arbel started the Israel IFS Institute. My sister-in-law is my brother's best gift to me. We have done all our training together. We've learned to love all of our parts, and she's given me three nieces and a nephew who I adore. And all of the self-leaders at selfleadership.org can help you in every way, so be sure to go there and find somebody near to you. And if it all sounds good to you to check out the Gold Pass, please go to lovesummit2014.com/gold, and you'll see the seven-week course that's starting next month to put into practice all of the principles, both of IFS and everything else this weekend. So one final thought. Peggy started with a note for you, Dick, that says, thank you for helping make this world a better place and for helping me become a much happier person. You are awesome. And you are awesome. And your gift is on your gift page. If you go to lovesummit2014.com/schedule, you'll get his free gift. And we all can be more self-led, more calm, clear, compassionate, connected, curious, creative, courageous, and confident. And then if you would come back at 2 o'clock Central Time, and David G. and I are going to be talking about how you can let down your walls and relate from your highest self, even in the most challenging times. You don't have to fight, flight, or freeze, or try to control or change your partner, or decide to leave or stay stuck in quiet desperation. We're going to be talking about the miracle of empathy, which starts with being compassionate with yourself and making a U-turn to love all of your parts. I'll also talk a bit about compassionate mediation and self-led divorce. But wherever you are in a relationship, looking for a relationship, or most important, your relationship with yourself, remember love is the answer, and it starts with loving yourself. So I'm so grateful to you, Dick, your brother John, and everyone associated with IFS, selfleadership.org. And I'm sending so much love to all of you. We're going to combine IFS, meditation, higher consciousness, and all the other ways to love ourselves to create more love, passion, connection, and fun the whole rest of the weekend at the Love Summit. So thank you for being here, Dick, and everyone, and I'll see you all soon. Bye-bye for now.